On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Paul Fournier of the Philadelphia Phillies organization. Paul, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Chris, thanks for having me. I appreciate you reaching out. This is my 15th season in the big leagues with the Philadelphia Phillies the past 6 years now at the major league level. I came from the Miami Marlins organization and the Montreal organization before that. My journey into baseball is a little bit different than most strength and conditioning coaches. I started off as an athletic trainer in the minor leagues, working in the Florida State League, became a rehab coordinator with Montreal and Miami 1 year, and then that led to a strength and conditioning position at the major league level with the Marlins. So out of my 25 years, 10 of those were at the minor league level as an athletic trainer, a rehab coordinator, and a strength and conditioning coordinator.
That's a long time in baseball.
It is. I tell people that I'm pretty much ruined for the professional world outside of baseball now. I think I'm so specialized, I don't think I could get a job anywhere else right now.
Where would you rather be, though, right?
Right, exactly. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good lifestyle if you can put up with some of the issues we all deal with.
Of course, yeah, there's issues everywhere you go. So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, one of the big talking points, was you wrote an article for the PBSCCS back in 2017, I have on my notes here, titled, CrossFit Isn't Going Anywhere Soon, But Does It Belong in Professional Baseball? And so I was hoping you could just elaborate a little bit on the article, maybe some thoughts on strength training and conditioning for professional baseball players, and then maybe elements to take from CrossFit and then maybe elements to avoid from CrossFit based on your own experience.
Sure. I kind of drank the Kool-Aid when I was 38 years old, so about 10 years ago, the CrossFit Kool-Aid. And for me personally, it was tremendous. It got me out of my own facility, whether it was with the Miami Marlins at the time or the Phillies when I first started here, and it got me into a community that was refreshing. But because of that, I had written an article for CrossFit headquarters, and that's kind of labeled me as a CrossFit guy because I was supporting their methodology at the time. I know people do talk about their injuries, rates, and frequencies, and that kind of thing, and exercise form, and are they cheating, are they not cheating, that kind of thing. But the bottom line is that actually CrossFit methodology, I think, is good for the general population. It's a very good fitness program. I think the injuries come from people that are stubborn or maybe doing things that they shouldn't be doing and really don't understand the scaling process and that kind of thing. And that can be attributed to the coaches and the coaches' education that they are dealing with at their affiliates. So when I first started, I tried to fit CrossFit into what I was doing as not mostly just as a tool for what I was doing with the Miami Marlins at the time. You know, they could have been, it was high intensity. It was the duration was short. We could get a lot accomplished in a short amount of time. The problem with it is, though, in baseball, we do specialize. They're highly skilled athletes, and I did have to cherry pick exercises. And by cherry picking your exercises, by definition, it's no longer CrossFit. But I like to say I was trying to train outside the box back then. We started with the things everybody else is doing now: the sled pushes, the pulls, the tire flips, the sledgehammer tosses, the swings, bodyweight exercises. The one thing CrossFit did teach me is that, you know, I got into the game back when strength and conditioning wasn't as popular in baseball. And it was a safe, they wanted a safe program. The weight room was an extension of the athletic training room. There was a lot of fear about injuries and that type of thing. And the thing about CrossFit at the time in my career, what it showed me was that, you know, the human body is more durable than we give it credit for. As long as your loads are appropriate for your range of motion and form, then what CrossFit taught me, there is no bad exercise. There is no bad load, as long as those three things are constant, that you can maintain your range of motion, you can maintain good form, and as far as doing things that some strength coaches may feel is inappropriate, that's the one thing CrossFit did teach me. So what happened, Gene Coleman reached out to me and asked me to talk about CrossFit and baseball in 2017. So I wrote that article, and the CrossFit for me is a fitness program that I think is doing tremendous work throughout the world, for that matter. It's established a community, a culture. It's brought Olympic lifting to the forefront. USA weightlifting has grown tremendously since CrossFit's been around. Women, men, kids, that sport has definitely grown because of CrossFit, in my opinion. As far as baseball goes and CrossFit, I think baseball being such a neurological, highly skilled sport, and you start focusing on just general preparation type work, especially in season or when baseball activity is high, I think you can get in, you take away from what strength and conditioning coaches actually do, and that is train baseball players, in our sport anyway. So there's other things that have to be considered. There's training ages, there's cultural backgrounds, there's position, there is amount of playing time. So a lot of those things have to be addressed. And as soon as you start cherry picking exercises and dealing with injury histories and training ages, it's no longer CrossFit anymore. It's what it is high intensity work or interval training in a short period of time. I think CrossFit style training or grunt work, it could be appropriate in the off season at certain periods of times. I also believe that it does break up some of the people that are getting complacent in the weight room or getting bored or stagnant with their programs, to mix it in there once in a while. It can be utilized as a tool, but there are, I mean, our goals are performance metrics and not fitness programs. Our players are measured on all these new metrics that are out there now, WOBA, batting averages, RBI, I mean, everything has a number attached to it, and those are all performance metrics that we have to be aware of, and we can't get in the way of that. So I do like the CrossFit methodology. As I said before, I'm not afraid to say that. I think injuries come from people that overextend themselves, possibly, and maybe not listen to their coaches. But as far as it's play some baseball, I think it does have to be sporadic.
Yeah, one of the big things there is, like, you talk about injury rates, and it's not necessarily CrossFit as much as it is either bad coaching or bad form or over pushing yourself, and that happens in anything, whether it's powerlifting, Olympic lifting, CrossFit, even in baseball specifically, if guys are pushing themselves too much, and even in their early work, like, they set themselves up for injury. So I don't necessarily think it's the CrossFit, you know, stigma that is out there that, oh, you're going to get injured if you do it. It's if you're pushing yourself, if you're not staying within your limits, you're not listening to your coaches. And that applies universally to any lifting program or type of lifting or whatever. So, and then I think the barbell has really come into play since CrossFit has kind of come into play. And I mean, I'm a big believer in using the barbell for a lot of things and getting a lot of work done. A lot of high intensity stuff. So there are definitely things to take away from it. And then, like you said, there are definitely things that probably should be avoided.
I agree with you 100%. And I would encourage everybody to before debunking CrossFit, is to just familiarize yourselves with it, because you're going to run into players now that are coming in that have had experience at affiliations or know somebody that has, and you're going to ask questions about it and why you would not want to use CrossFit in a baseball setting, or why you may use it at certain times. That's totally up to the discretion of the strength and conditioning coach, but just be knowledgeable about that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Guys are getting smarter and smarter. And they have more questions, and if you're prepared to answer those questions and give a good reason for why you should or shouldn't do something, it helps you with that relationship with them versus, hey, I heard somebody was doing CrossFit in the offseason and they made good gains, and you just shoot it down like, no, that's stupid, don't do that. It's not as educated, and guys are going to be a little bit more hesitant to ask you meaningful questions in the future.
I agree. You know, at that training age, some of those guys that are coming in with those questions, just going throughout a normal day for them, they are making gains. Their testosterone, their hormones are at their peak levels. Any program, as long as it's consistent, is going to do the job at that point in time. And not that it's a CrossFit thing or anything else, but, you know, it's we're human beings. We have emotions. We have personalities. And sometimes we see those things come out in our training. And if you're a stubborn person in general, it's going to affect your training habits for sure.
Yeah, 100% agree. So you've been in baseball a long, long time. I'm sure you've seen a lot of things, heard a lot of things. So I want to hear your best professional baseball story, whether it's a story of perseverance and success or something that made you laugh or you look back on it and something was lost in translation. Maybe just your most memorable baseball story that you have.
You know, it's a selfish memory. But it kind of relates to some other memories that I have. And it's not, you know, I was with the World Series team. I was part of the All-Star team in 2014. I've had Rookie of the Years. I've had MVPs. I've had Cy Young candidates. But for me, it's the off-the-field stuff. My favorite story, not too many people know, I am a motorcycle enthusiast. In 2008, I had two players present to me a brand-new Harley-Davidson on the field. Prior to batting practice, it caught me off guard. Our team photographer was floating around out there, and I noticed him out there. We were in Miami. The two players wanted to get some work done outside, which I thought was strange. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Miami in August, and nobody wants to go outside at that time. Happened to be out there with running some sprints. I'm actually running with them, and I heard a rev. And then I see our manager at the time, Freddie Gonzalez, riding the motorcycle along the warning track in the outfield and brought it over to me. And Luis Gonzalez was one of the players. The other one was Wes Helms. And they asked me, why don't you get on and take it for a spin and see if you like it? And I said, you know, it's not my thing to ride somebody else's bike. And Louis tossed me the keys and says, dude, it's yours. And I was sick to my stomach, you know, the goosebumps, the whole thing. It was one of those days that is somewhat of a blur, but because of the team photographer that was out there, which I really didn't pay much attention to, took a ton of pictures of that whole process. And looking back at those pictures, I realized half the team was out there at some point, which I didn't even notice during the time. So that being one of my best memories, that leads me into some of the other things that happened. Once you establish relationships with a lot of your players, it's the texts when they move on to another organization or they're released or they're retired saying, you know what, I should have listened. I should have bought in more. I should have paid more attention, or I really appreciated everything you did. Can you help me with this? And we're in the middle of a strength and conditioning camp right now. And you wonder sometimes if you're really touching these guys on an emotional level. We had a meeting yesterday at the end of the day, and one of our Latin players got up in English and spoke about how important this camp is to him. And he's been here three times, and then relayed that same information in Spanish to the Spanish speaking counterparts during the camp. And it was a real touching moment because you really, in this day and age with some of the players that you deal with, you don't hear that type of feedback. They now our players expect to be told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, and then they go about doing it, and you don't get a lot of feedbacks like pulling teeth. But to have somebody volunteer that information, when he started this camp, there was like three guys in the camp, and he was one of the guys, and it's grown. We have three camps in the offseason now, and each of them are about 30 players large, and he's been at every one ever since, and to have him do that yesterday. So as far as my memories in baseball go, it's more on a personal level. It's enabled me to have really good relationships with a lot of different people, whether it's front office, managers, position coaches, other strength coaches and players, athletic trainers. It's just, that's what, when I leave the game, that's what I'll take with me.
Yeah, that's such a cool story, man, that they did that for you. And it just goes to show how much they cared and respected you and appreciated what you do. So that's awesome to hear. And then the young Latin player, man, that a lot of those guys are hesitant to speak in English in front of a big group. So for a guy
Exactly
to
right.
do that and you know, put himself out there like that for you guys, that speaks a lot to your program and yourself and your coaches and what you guys are doing. So big kudos to you.
Appreciate it. You know, the big part of it was that he stood up and went to the front of the room. It was an intimidating setting for him. There's 50 people in the room, including our major league manager, and it was just a very impressive moment for me, and I was glad to be there to see that.
Yeah, that's so awesome, man. That's really, really cool stuff. So, what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Well, because of the CrossFit story, you may think I do believe in grunt work. I do believe during general preparation phases, tapering phases, things like that. I do believe in just grunt work. You know, a work back 30 years ago in the off season, when major league players didn't make a ton of money, they split wood in the off season. They worked their land. They worked on the farms. Nowadays there are players that do have ranches that do work on their properties. It creates just such a, I call it country strong. I do believe in grunt work. It doesn't have to be specific. It just has to be consistent. You know, eventually in the off season, they do need to get to their training programs, but I think sprinkling some grunt work in the off season, especially early on, is a beneficial thing. Especially nowadays with the youth that are coming into spring training in our lower levels, nobody has been through that process anymore. With baseball being year round and all-star teams and travel teams, kids aren't working anymore. Their parents are flipping the bill, and they don't have calluses on their hands yet. And I do believe there is a benefit from doing grunt work. The other thing I believe in is, you know, I may be putting my foot in my mouth here, but is a lot of strength and conditioning coaches are calling themselves performance coaches in baseball. I'm not so sure at the older levels that we really help out a lot with performance. The way I go about my day is that I'm trying to produce the best version of the player's self. That's what I want to see happen. And if a side effect is increased performance, then great. But it's such a skilled sport. It's such a neurological sport. I'm trying to stay out of the way of their skill development through repetition on the field. I'm trying to not fatigue the neurological system. So I'm trying to develop the best version of the player. And I don't focus on performance as much as some other strength coaches may. I think it kind of chaps my ass about strength and conditioning coaches changing their name to performance coaches when there isn't an accredited program out there that's certifying performance coaching. There aren't internet courses on that kind of thing. I mean, we're all certified through the Strength and Conditioning Association and National Strength and Conditioning Association. So I do believe in that terminology, strength and conditioning coaching. And I do believe what we do at this level is really trying to bring out the best version of our players as possible. And that hopefully does translate to increased performance, but that's not what I'm focused on.
Both very good points. I especially like the grunt work and swinging a sledgehammer type idea. I think a lot of that gets lost on our younger generation. Like you said, my brother's 14, and I'm like trying to teach him, hey, just you got to do some of this stuff, man. Get your hands dirty, get some calluses on your hands, grow up a little bit, and then worry about playing baseball. Don't play year round. You got to do some other stuff too. So, both very good points for sure. So, what do you think makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Maybe just in general, and then in professional baseball specifically.
You know what I tell our younger strength coaches when they're speaking, they need to be convicted. They have to have conviction in their voice. They have to be confident and they have to be honest. If they don't have the answer, be honest about it, but go get the answer for that person. I think those are three traits that are appropriate for any leader. Humility, being accountable. I think those are the big ones for me. And that's what strength and conditioning coaches are. They're leaders in the weight room. And if you're not able to be a leader, compliance is going to go down and you're going to get run out of this game. However, speaking about professional baseball, I think the most you have to have the other things like I just mentioned. But for me, the most important thing that a strength and conditioning coach can have is the ability to build relationships, whether it's with your players, with your coworkers, with the front office, and have to learn how to navigate all that. Certain things that a player tells you may not be pertinent to be discussed with other people. And you have to kind of sift through that kind of thing. And having your players' trust is a big, big deal. And if you can't establish good relationships with your players, your compliance is going to suffer. And when you look around the league and see strength and conditioning coaches being let go, a lot of the reason is, and again, a lot of it is uncontrollable. I mean, it's the nature of the game. But compliance or lack of thereof comes up. Not being able to work well with others is an issue. Those are big deals for me.
Yeah, you have to be able to work with others in this game. You have to. There's so many people that you're going to interact with on a daily basis throughout an organization. Like you said, front office, coaches, players. Like, if you can't work well with others and you can't gain their trust, you're in big trouble.
Right.
So what advice do you have for others, maybe guys that are looking to get into professional baseball or move up, or just even other coaches who have been around a while who just want to keep their knowledge high?
You know, for me, you know, being knowledgeable is one thing, and I always be on top of your game. I think with people coming into the game, I do want them to be – you know, exploring more of the sports science stuff. I mean, that's a trend right now we're seeing. And even when we look at people that have master's degree programs in exercise science, they are not being exposed to a lot of the stuff that's out there, from testing and retesting, heart rate variability, all the jump tests that are out there, fatigue indexes, all that kind of stuff. So I do encourage them to be at least knowledgeable about that. And know the game, too, and know what you're getting yourself into. That's an important one. But from what I try to do as a mentor in our organization with our strength coaches is to help them develop their personality, whoever, not trying to make them anybody different than what we saw during the interview process, but to develop who they are, confidence, that being accountable, if something does happen, yeah, all right, I'll learn from that. I'll fix that. So I do believe in that. Being a leader, I think, is a huge thing. And you can see these qualities during the interview process. Some people will come in during the interview process to be a little quiet and a little reserved, and almost like they're overthinking the process, giving you answers that they think you want to hear. I look for somebody that's coming in gung-ho, passionate, energetic, and tell me answers that they're convicted in, that they believe in and what they're passionate about. That's what I care about, and that's... So when I talk to coaches about continuing education, that kind of thing, we want them to explore their interests, whether it's PRI or a philosophy in coaching or theory in coaching or more of a biometrics type course, athletic training course, whatever it is. We want them to explore their individual interests. The more individuals we have on a team, I think the more knowledge that we will have as a group. And so I do encourage that a lot.
Yeah, 100%. And kind of going along that, where do you yourself go for continuing ed? Are you reading any books, attending seminars, listening to podcasts?
I'm not a huge book reader. I do have a couple books that I'm looking at right now, The Conscious Coach and The Science and Practice of Strength and Conditioning. I do most of my stuff online. I spend a lot of time on sports biometrics news that kind of – is kind of a page of a lot of different information, and then I can go from there to all the different articles and books and things like that, and just get bits and pieces of things that I care about. I also spend a lot of time on the Science for Sport website, which does have a membership, and you can get monthly journals and things like that. I try to hit three conferences a year. Obviously, the winter meetings is one. I'm a big coaches conference guy with the NSCA in January. And then I try to hit something else, whether it's biometrics conference in San Francisco, an athletic training conference like the ASMI in Alabama, or maybe a refresher, the USA weightlifting cert, things along those things. I try to hit, two of them are definitely constants for me. And then that third one, I kind of try to see where my interests are at that moment in time. And I haven't been to the SMI in a few years, so this year I'm going to go to the SMI and just kind of see and just kind of catch up on some things. Some of it is refresher. And again, I'm being blessed being at the Philadelphia Phillies organization where continuing education is important to them. And I don't have to worry about finances for that kind of thing. So it helps out a lot.
Yeah, that's awesome that they support that then.
Yeah, it's tremendous. And even with our minor league strength coaches, it's encouraged. Every other year we do go as a group to the coaches conference for the NSCA. I do want them exposed to other strength and conditioning coaches that are outside our game. And then the other year that we're not doing that as a group, they're allowed to pick something of interest and go to that. And we approve it, and it works out well. It brings a lot of – and then we have them actually present in spring training on the course that they go to and that kind of thing. It gives them some practice to stand up in front of a group and present and get creative, and which is a huge skill in itself.
Yeah, that in itself is kind of career development, just standing up in front of others and having to speak and teach what you were taught. So that's cool too.
We have a symposium every year in spring training, and we alternate athletic training dominant or strength and conditioning dominant, but both groups are involved. So that our education is real important to us for sure.
Yeah, as it should be. Continuing it is very, very important. So I know you got strength camp going on. I don't want to take too much of your time, but if you have a few minutes, I'd like to do a lightning round with you. Are you game?
Yeah, for sure. I'm game. I'll do my best. Cool. My brain isn't too fast, though, so bear with me.
First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
You know, the field of strength and conditioning in baseball, my biggest influence is Rick Slade, who's now the first assistant with the Oakland Raiders. When I came to the league in 2003, he was really back then we shared weight rooms. You know, now the facilities are beautiful and everybody has a facility they can go to, whether you're on the road or at home. Back then we shared facilities. So if we were visiting New York, I would use his weight room, and gave us a lot of time to interact, and he helped me out a ton. I probably had no business being a major league strength coach in 2003. It was a different profession back then, but he was a legitimate strength and conditioning coach that took time to speak with me.
That's awesome. One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
You know, for me, it would be a bar and some Olympic weights. I believe in the deadlift. For baseball players, between the shoulder retraction and the lower half posterior chain development, I believe that's the number one exercise to go to.
Right on. Deadlift is the king. Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I think, you know, last year I went to a high school in New Hampshire, a little podunk high school, graduating class of like 60, tiny. But I was inducted to the High School Athletic Hall of Fame, which was a big deal to me because, I haven't really given high school a second thought since I left. I went to college in Boston, and then soon after college I got into baseball back in the mid-90s. And then last year they reached out to me, and it was only the second year they were doing it. So that was a special time for me. It made my parents proud. They still live in the area up there. So I think I would have to go with that for now.
Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Every kid wanted to be a fireman. Every boy wanted to be a fireman when he grew up. So I would have to say that.
Not like professional Harley rider or anything like that?
No. As long as I have vacation for Sturgis Bike Week out in South Dakota in the summertime, I'll do anything. One of these days I'll work into my baseball contract where I get 2 weeks off in August. Head to South Dakota. Biggest party in the world.
I'll take your word for it. All right, my man. I appreciate your time. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more information from you? Are you on social media or?
I'm not a big social media guy, but my email is probably the best way to do it. And I answer all my emails and I'm around my phone all the time. So it'll be pfournier, Fournier at phillies.com. And I'll be more than happy to answer emails. And I try my best to, I get approached by a lot of young strength coaches that are not in the game yet. And I have very good conversations with them. And I'm more than happy to do that over email.
Perfect. Well, Paul, thank you again for your time. I appreciate the stories and the insight, and we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Paul. I hope you enjoyed this one and the discussion that we had on CrossFit and all the tips and advice that he shared and ways to be successful as a strength and conditioning coach. Three things that I took from Paul in this episode: stay up on technology, have conviction and confidence when you speak, and be honest with your players. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.